Trekkies, welcome to Trek Freaks, part of the Geek Freaks Network. On this podcast, we analyze and review every episode of Star Trek, starting all the way back with the original series. I don't know why I put so much emphasis on that, but my name is Kevin. I am joined by Jonathan.
Hey, how's it going, Kevin?
Oh, dude, it's going good. I don't know if it's going to go so great while we're talking about this episode, but I think we can handle it. I think we're the ones that can handle this one.
Yeah, this is a little controversial, but I like this episode. I like almost all of them. But we're talking about the original series, Season 2, Episode 21, Patterns of Force.
All right. And before we get to that, I've got a question for you.
Ooh, what you got?
All right. So this episode takes place in, it's very reminiscent of a Nazi Germany. I'm just going to throw that out there at the beginning of this episode. So if there's anybody that doesn't want to listen to this based on that, we fully understand. This is a very Nazi-filled episode. But the question based on that, if there was any other time period or setting that you could see this planet, the planet of Ecos being set in or based on, what would that be?
So that's hard because I don't know a lot of history on wars, but I do know a little bit about our American Civil War. So I think that would be kind of cool to see just, you know, the whole different perspective, different uniforms and whatnot. I go with the Civil War.
I think that would fit very well. Like, they could have had Ecos and Zeon, I think, be one planet and have an American Civil War style Civil War on that planet. And it would have been a very similar episode. I like that answer a lot. I was thinking like freaking ancient Rome. Like,
there you go.
You build the Roman Empire and then see it all destroyed within, you know, with internal like infighting and stuff, and kind of get along the same lines of the story where somebody from Earth knows something from history, plants the seed on the planet, and yeah.
That's one thing, is we see that somebody with our knowledge, like, I mean, obviously an engineer, a scientist, a smart person from Earth, can advance a society so fast, so, you know, effectively. But, you know, if they're like indigenous people rubbing sticks together and throwing spears, like, how easy would it be to educate them? You know, it seems like it would be difficult. Like, you would be having to really go through the growing pains, like you're saying, you'd go through like a Roman, you know, period, that the was it Bronze Age, and learn, you know, they'd have to learn how to forge steel, and it would take a long time, I think, to get to, okay, now we could build guns and, you know, buildings and cars. Like, I think it would take a lot longer than we're seeing here to actually develop a culture that way.
Yeah, and I think Star Trek even kind of said that a few episodes back in A Private Little War. Like, the Klingons were like, here are some guns. We'll kind of show you how to make them, but you're still going to be dependent on us.
And that's true. And they tried to make them look like they were handmade materials, but they were actually replicated.
Right.
It was just
Did give them the technology, if you want to call it that, to be able to forge things. Like, there were forges and stuff for them to make their own versions of that. But Star Trek said it would take a while. And now in this episode, Star Trek's saying it can go really fast. But they also explained that the Zeons were very intelligent people and that the Ecosians were very warlike. So with the blend of those two on both planets, they could, in theory, rise up faster than a normal civilization would.
Yeah, that's true. I also like episodes that have some kind of temporal misunderstanding, whatever, where, you know, the planet's traveling or moving at a different speed and time or something. That always makes things make a little bit more sense, feel more comfortable. And you could play with it. You know, they get off the ship and only 2 days pass on the ship. So they come back and they're all torn up. They're like, whoa, what happened? You guys were only gone for a couple days. And oh, no, it's been, you know, 18 months or something like that.
Yeah, Deep Space Nine had an episode like that where there was a planet that would phase in and out, that would, like, time would pass like very fast or something. The one that comes to mind the most, I'm not going to bring up Lower Decks right away. I don't think I've got anything Lower Decks to bring up in this entire episode. But the other show I bring up all the time is The Orville. They had an episode like this where there was a planet that they landed on, then the away team went on, and Kelly, the first officer, healed a girl that had fallen and she was going to get infected and she was going to die, but she healed her. And all of a sudden the planet phases out and comes back, and it's been, I don't remember how long, 400 years, 200 years. It was a long number of years that went by, and they all of a sudden are starting to think of Kelly as a god, as the god of that planet. And then as time goes on, it's really interesting to see like a microcosm of evolution, I suppose.
Yeah. There's a similar episode with I don't remember the whole plot of it, but on Voyager, where the Doctor goes down to a planet like that with his mobile emitter, and he's eternal, so he ends up living an entire lifetime down there with these people, which is like, you know, I'm surprised his pattern buffers can sustain that long of being functional, but, you know, I imagine he learned a whole lot from just that episode on humanity.
Yeah. That's
good character development, I guess.
Well, getting back to this episode, let us go into the warp speed recap. Nazis in space. A so-called professor, John Gill, has gone missing on an observation mission on Ecos. It turns out he was attempting to help the warlike people of the planet by introducing them to the efficiencies of old Earth-style Nazis, while running the party himself to keep the evil out of the situation. Well, that went about as well as you would think. His second-in-command took over, drugging the new Führer, and leading the Ecosians into a war with the neighboring Xeons. I'm going to say Xeons. Kirk and Spock, in typical TOS-era fashion, fumble their way into fixing things. They sneak around, get caught several times, end up locating the Xeon underground resistance, sneak into a Nazi shindig, get answers out of Gil, out Gil's second-in-command as the true evil to the people of Ecos, and carry on to see what other problems they can clumsily solve throughout the galaxy.
Nice.
Yeah, that was a good recap. I had a bitter taste in my mouth about this. Like, the original series, they fumble their way into so many messes. I should say they stumble into so many messes and then fumble their way out of them. Like,
yeah.
They have to be the luckiest crew in Starfleet.
Yeah, they rely heavily on luck. But again, at their time in the 60s, they don't comprehend what kind of technology we might have in the future. So I think now, once we are a much more technologically based society, theirs is more, you know, person to person relations. So we can always think of a technical way, you know, develop some little gadget by taking apart your tricorder, and now you have a way to cut open the bars or get out of the room or whatever. But I don't think they tend to think that way in this time.
I think the problem from my perspective is more that they want Kirk to be a cowboy. Like, yeah. He's a cowboy in space who's also the leader of this ship. And
what if he was played by Harrison Ford? This is Indiana Jones in space.
That would have been a totally... If they were trying to do, like, an Indiana Jones-style character for Kirk...
Or Han Solo.
Yeah. That was where my first thought went, was Han Solo. Yeah. But
both two and one.
They're basically the same character.
Exactly. I never realized that. Those are the same actor playing the same character. I wonder if they intended on Han Solo being like, hey, we want an Indiana Jones in space. I don't know which one came first, though. That's a good question.
I'm pretty sure Star Wars was first before Indiana Jones.
Oh, okay. So they said we want a Han Solo in, like, caves and stuff? That's not as fun. That's not as exciting.
No, I think it was more like they wanted an archaeologist, a badass archaeologist, and they're like, all right, well, Harrison Ford played Han Solo. Just do that again.
There you go. Okay.
But
a different kind of gun.
I think Kirk is a very similar style character to a Han Solo or an Indiana Jones. Like, he has a lot of good people around him, particularly Spock. Spock seems to be the one that gets them out of every situation that they could possibly ever get themselves in. And it's usually with the either a mind meld, a Vulcan nerve pinch, or a combination of the two.
Yeah, Spock is always his ride or die.
Yeah.
So he's always willing to do what it takes to get out of there. And he's smart. And a lot of times it's that Vulcan, like, super strength, or how he's just a little bit, you know, more powerful than most humans, that tends to save him, I think.
I do think that every character, a good character, needs flaws. And I think that between the three of them, with Kirk, Spock, and McCoy, they make one perfect character. Like, not perfect as an interesting character, but they make one perfect person. Like, they've got that with the three of them. They've got the morality of McCoy. They've got the logic and the strength of Spock, with the gumption, I suppose, of Kirk. The go-get-em attitude.
That moxie.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. And Kirk is also smart in some or most situations. Sometimes he makes dumb calls that it's like, why would you do that? Spock should have made that call for you or something. But strategically, he does make good moves a lot of times.
Yeah. Bones, while being the moral like center, I suppose, to some extent, of the main three cast members, he was a little crotchety right at the beginning of this episode. They're like, yeah, we need to find John Gill. He was on this planet. And Bones is like, well, what do you think happened to him? Where is he? What's going on? And Kirk just looks at him and goes, well, that's why we're here. We're here to find out. I don't have any answers. We're here to find the answers.
Like, calm down, bud.
It was pretty funny, but what was the point in that?
Yeah, I'm wondering, well, maybe it relates to the last episode. I don't remember what he had going on, but maybe he is upset from something previously, but they don't carry things over like that usually. So maybe he was just having a bad day as an actor who wanted his character to be taken more seriously or something like that.
Yeah. I did think that when they were beaming down to Ecos to start their mission of looking for John Gill, they actually properly planned. Like they were talking about having subcutaneous transponders embedded into their arms.
Yeah.
And they finally actually were, yeah.
Oh my God. But they didn't
freaking use them as transponders at all.
Right. When they're stuck in the prison cell, you think, okay, now's the time. Like, double tap the transponder and they'll beam us back or something like that. No, we're going to cut them out of our arms and use them to make a laser. What? Come on, guys. It's just, I don't know, MacGyvering their way out, but it's just funny.
Maybe that's what MacGyver was based on Kirk.
I could see that.
Oh, man. I thought that I was like, they're dressed like how they thought they should be dressed. But you'd figure if they knew to dress in that style, that they would know that there were Nazis on the planet and would then dress in Nazi uniforms.
I think the dressing is what was reported when Gil last reported. Yeah, so they're going off of their database, their records, not like a fresh look at the planet. And that's where they fall short with most other planets too. As they get there, it's like you have sensors and scanners and stuff, right? I mean, at least like binoculars, see what's going on down there. And that way you're a little more prepared. I mean, if they knew it was going to be Nazi Germany when they get down there, they would have dressed the part. Yeah. And they could have been armed properly and ready to fight if they need to. But they didn't do any research that was, you know, new, fresh information. So,
well, that's one of the problems. I don't know if it's a problem, but Strange New Worlds. No, sorry, not even Strange New Worlds. This was Discovery, season two of Discovery, when Pike was in command of Discovery. They are trying. I think it's Pike, Burnham, and Owo were going to go down to a planet, but in order to dress appropriately, they actually, like, you could see on screen, they zoomed into the planet to see how the people were dressed and looked at the architecture and stuff. And that took place before this. So that's the kind of, like, the minor retcon stuff that they did in bringing in prequels to this original series. That's like, yeah, that means they could have technically done it then if you don't think about it too hard.
They've broken the transporter technology too, that it's a lot more effective in previous series than it is now in this one. So
yeah,
it's just a little bit of inconsistencies.
Yeah,
but I agree. They should be able to just see the planet to be better prepared. I mean, honestly, if they could study from space and not interact with the people as much as possible, because Prime Directive, they should avoid interacting with them until they have to. Watch for a couple days or a week or something like that and see if you could find, like, who is the leader? Where is the leader? Will you observing the people eventually lead you to the guy you're trying to find? So you could just transport him out and not have to interact with anybody.
Yeah, there's a lot of little things like that, but it wouldn't make for as interesting of an episode of Star Trek.
A boring episode seeing Kirk or Spock looking through the little lens all the time.
Right. So I did like that when the Enterprise was approaching the planet and Ecos shot a missile, it was like a nuclear missile up at Enterprise. They were actually using that as propaganda against the Zeons, saying that Zeon launched an attack and it was thwarted by the Ecosians. That was a pretty clever bit of propaganda that I'm pretty sure most people that know anything about the Nazis and World War II, it was very true to history.
And I like when they get down there that Kirk and Spock and I think Bones, whoever's with them, they see that advertisement. I think it was just Kirk and Spock. And they see that propaganda that the government's saying, like, oh, yeah, we got those guys and all this stuff. And he's like, turns to Spock. What does he say? Like, you look pretty good for a guy that's been destroyed or something like that. Or,
yeah, we completely annihilated or something annihilated, like that. Yeah. It was something along those lines. Yeah, that was good. I like that.
Yeah.
Man, propaganda, it just made me think about this. Propaganda is a big part in any kind of war, cultural war or actual war. And every side of every war that I've ever studied to any extent uses propaganda effectively. And that was reflected in this episode pretty well.
Yeah, because in war, I mean, unfortunately, people do questionable things that even their own morals are tested with. And the bulk of your community that you're, going to war to protect probably won't agree with bending your morals to, make it fit this situation. So they lie to their own people to, get them on their side and support their cause.
Yeah. Or just bring in more guns so that they can fend off the Klingons that are bringing guns to a plant. Oh, man, there's so many of these episodes back to back to back. It's crazy. Yeah.
I'm wondering if this is at this time is when they really started considering, because I don't remember if we've established the Prime Directive clear, like kind clearly of. As what it is later. Yeah, they mention it in one episode, but then they I don't know. I think now they're like, okay, cool. We like the idea of a Prime Directive. Just like later on, they decide, okay, we like the idea of a God character. We're going to create Q, so we have a revolving one. Like, we like the idea of having to deal with, our laws versus someone else's laws. So we're going to create this Prime Directive, and it's going to be kind of an anchor point that we can go back to every once in a while where we're pushing the boundaries of what we're allowed to do.
I also wonder if at this point, since this is the end of season two, or pretty close to the end, I think we've got like maybe six episodes left or so.
Yeah.
Or five episodes, something like that. They didn't know if they were going to get renewed for a season three. So a lot of these stories that Roddenberry wanted to tell, he probably pushed them here.
Yeah,
would be my thought to get them to make sure that those episodes could get made.
Yeah, when you think about this, I mean, this is 68 that this came out. This is still very fresh after World War II.
Yeah.
So this is a super sensitive topic to talk about Nazis and, Nazi Germany at all. So to put that on your TV show and thinking like you're going to get renewed, it's a ballsy move, right? You're going to get a lot of people probably talking about your show. It's eventually goes to reruns and stuff was where most people see it, but I think that had to kind of be a attention grabbing episode for sure.
Oh yeah. I mean, we're like what, 75 ish years, 80 years removed from World War II, 70 to 80. And it's still like a sensitive subject to this day. Yeah. Like seeing a swastika on my screen, it was weird. Like you don't see that on TV. I think Enterprise, the prequel series, did an episode where aliens went back in time to Earth during World War II and took command of Nazi Germany. But even they like switched a lot of the symbols and stuff to make it so it wasn't so harsh to look at, I suppose.
Oh, we see a very similar episode to this on Voyager.
Go figure.
With the Horosians. I forgot about that. So in the holodeck, the Horosians recreate World War II because they want a good battle to fight their new prey.
Right.
And they're recreating it over and over again on the holodeck so they could just keep, almost killing the Voyager crew. But yeah, the Horosians are all in Nazi, uniforms.
I wonder if I'm confusing the Zindi and the Horosian. The Zindi from Enterprise. I think maybe there was a two-parter in Enterprise where they went back in time to World War II, but I might be mixing that up with the episode you're talking about of Voyager.
Because this is, I think it's Hunter and Prey, but it's it's a two-parter episode. I can't remember what it's called. But it's definitely a two-parter with the Horosians in World War II. And it's cool because like the name Maquis is actually from the French Resistance, and that's what the Chakotay's people were from. It was the group of the Maquis that joined Voyager. A rebel group or whatever, but they in that episode are playing rebels trying to fight back against, or I guess the Alliance, trying to fight back against the Nazi Germany.
I think you and Frank talked about this last week, but I like how every episode of Trek Freaks is, how fast can we get through the original series to get through to the shows that we like?
Yes, I mean, it's a good show. The original series is fun, and I imagine, especially for its time, it was, groundbreaking. This, a lot of the stuff probably hadn't really been on TV, just in books and stuff, but I mean, we built off of this to make such fun you know, shows that, you know, we're always talking about our favorite shows while trying to talk about these episodes. And yeah, once we even, I mean, just Next Generation is going to be great, but then I can't wait till Voyager, but I know Next Generation, Deep Space Nine are really good shows too. So
I'm really excited for Deep Space Nine because you haven't seen very much of that.
Yeah.
And it's my favorite.
I got to watch more though. I've probably seen like 10 episodes now, 10 or 15. And I like them. And sometimes I would put it on in the background, but not really pay attention. So I don't count those ones. But yeah, I think I'm going to try to watch them all before we get to it because we got a couple years anyways.
So. I also can't wait till we get to Enterprise, the prequel series, because I've seen that through like two or three times. Mm-hmm. And every time I rewatch it, I like it more. It's aging well with time. So anyway, this is the original series. And this is this is what we're talking about. We see that Spock and Kirk each take a Nazi uniform after very easily subduing some Nazis. Yeah.
Like so Nazis are like on guard, right? They're in the middle of a war. These guys are all carrying guns and they're trying to, you know, kill the enemies. I can't remember what they're called. As soon as they see him. How is this so easy? They're so easily fooled.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
That could be part of the downside to them being brought up to that level so quickly. They might not have been ready for a dictatorship and that the true authoritarianism with. Yeah, they might not have just been set up for it.
They didn't quite go through boot camp. They were just given a uniform and a gun.
Pretty much. Yeah. Yeah. But seeing Spock in a Nazi uniform, I don't know why it looked natural. OK, that sounds really harsh. It didn't look as weird seeing Kirk in a uniform that he is obviously opposed to. But seeing Spock in that uniform, I don't know what it was about it. It was very off-putting. I mean, the uniform itself is very off-putting. Don't get me wrong. But seeing Spock in there particularly, it was like, it just seemed so wrong.
Yeah, it was just a weird look. I mean, he's Spock. He's an alien, obviously, but he's not, you know, his people are so logical and peaceful. Do you think if he was a, what are the other Vulcan descendants?
Romulans?
Romulan, yeah. Do you think if he was a Romulan in the same uniform, it would be more fitting?
I mean, maybe. I think it's more Spock's.
Romulan uniforms are like dark and sharp fit and look like military uniforms already, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, very true. Until I think TNG era, they had like those shoulder pads and those things looked really
Judge
weird.
Judge Dredd shoulder pads.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I think what it was about seeing Spock was that his demeanor was so much different because Spock he's a logical mind. He knows what's going on, but his character doesn't know how to act. Like Leonard Nimoy knows how to act, but Spock does not. So
that's true. Doesn't know how to blend in.
Exactly. Kirk can be in that uniform and he can put himself in that role. Shatner not as much, but Kirk himself as the character can. Like he can he already exudes, you know, confidence and authority.
Yeah.
Spock doesn't. And I think that's where in my mind it was like, this seems weird.
I wonder if there are Vulcan actors on their planet, you know, their form of entertainment. I mean, they're probably entertained by watching somebody solve math problems or something like that, but I wonder if they have, you know, arts. I mean, do they paint? Do they act? Do you have to see? Can you see a Vulcan being silly playing a character?
You just blew my mind.
You're
like,
welcome.
Does that happen? Like, do they have those? Do Vulcans have plays? This is probably a question that's been answered in an episode, and I don't know.
I doubt they do, though, honestly. I think they must have art of some sort, but like, you know, him playing the harp or, you know, maybe reciting poetry, real calm entertainment. They'd probably all, you know, sit in a quiet room and listen to somebody, you know, read a story or tell a story or something like that. But yeah, I don't know. Plays might be a little bit too silly for them.
I gotcha.
I mean, they don't have to be silly. A play can be very serious and dramatic, but I don't know about seeing Vulcans act.
Well, I can tell you they probably didn't have a rendition of Hamilton.
Right? Oh, man. So this doesn't go for very long, though, right? These guys get caught.
Oh, yeah. Pretty
one
quick.
One general or whatever tells Spock to remove his helmet. because you notice he looked a little questionable, and sure enough, oh yeah, he's got pointy ears and pointy eyebrows and all that stuff. So they get captured, and right away we see they're being whipped in like a holding cell or something like that, right?
Yep. Shirtless. They're both very shirtless.
Yeah, very shirtless. And we see right away we see right away Spock has the green blood coming through as he's being whipped. They don't say anything about that.
Nope.
I'm so surprised they're not like, why is this guy green? Maybe we should dissect him right now because this is weird and we're scared. I think that's, in Nazi Germany, they probably would have, let's go ahead and execute this one or strap him down to the table at least and figure out what this is because it's not human.
Yeah. The other thing is their phasers were taken. Their phasers. Why do they keep taking phasers to these missions? Every time.
If it looked like a wooden log, nobody would have taken it.
We've talked about that before. Yeah.
Disguise it as something mundane or build it into your uniform or something.
They had a pistol that they took from one of the Nazi guards. They easily got a weapon. I understand not wanting to go down without a weapon.
If you research the planet and you find out what weapons they have, just replicate yourself a pistol.
Exactly. Oh my gosh. Don't keep taking phasers. Oh my.
It's going to create a big problem with the Prime Directive.
Yeah. This is also when we see that there's a Zeon prisoner that's in a cell next to Kirk and Spock. And Kirk asks why they hate the Zeon so much. And the Zeon says, because without us to hate, there would be nothing to hold them together, which I think was kind of, that was absolutely what the Nazi Party was about to begin with. Part of it. But that explains a lot of hate in general. And I think that was a very powerful line in this episode. Probably the most powerful line in this episode for sure.
And not to get too political, but we see that every day, right? Yeah. I mean, in our politics and global politics, but like one side will stir people up about a certain topic and villainize something so bad. If you want to banish all lemons, explain lemons are terrible for you and they erode your teeth and they're killing your children and they're poisoning your house. And eventually people will just be like, oh, wow, did you guys hear how bad lemons are? My God, we need a vote to just banish all lemons. It's dumb. It comes from nothing, but it gets people together on that side.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate that we see it so much. Obviously, this was effectively used in Nazi Germany, and we don't want to let that happen again. So we should try to not let propaganda manipulate us.
Speaking of stupid, Kirk realizes, we've got subcutaneous transponders. Why don't we use them? And instead of using them
to beam out,
Enterprise was out of range for the next hour or so, he said. I don't know how Enterprise could be out of range when they seem to be able to. Anyway, they were conveniently out of range. They build this thing with a strap of metal from the bed and the two sub-Q transponders. The crystals that are inside them, I forgot what Spock said, they're a specific kind of crystal, and holds them up to a light bulb to make a laser that shot the light or the lock on the cell door. What did you think of that? That was a mess. So
I would have done that differently. The holding it up to make the laser and stuff. I think the better bet would have been you cut it out of your skin, you put it against the lock, and when you crush it, it explodes or something. Makes a plasma burst or something. I think that would have been a little more believable.
I was thinking put one in the lock and then hold the other one up to a light, and the first one that's by the light is used as a magnifying glass of sorts.
Yeah.
And it can just focus the laser that for some reason made the weirdest noise that I don't think it should have been making because there wasn't anything activating. It was weird.
I think it would have been better getting a little more technical, but if you were to take out the light bulb and break it, and then, you remove the filament, you could put your little
they could have gotten crystal a little more in there. Depth.
So, you're putting the electricity through it. But they probably wouldn't put that on TV because children are going to be removing light bulbs and breaking them to play with the filament inside, maybe screwing them back in with it exposed. That'd be really dangerous. So, that's probably a good reason not to do that.
So Kirk, Spock, and that other Zeon, the Zeon guy that they were talking to, end up escaping from the prison area. And they go to a lab where the I guess the phasers are probably at, but they don't talk about them again. They're looking for a communicator at this point. Their communicators are in the lab. So they get into the lab and Spock starts playing with the communicators and they run into more guards. Like they get caught again. They get caught again. Like, how do they keep getting caught?
They're not hiding good enough. They're just kind of running down the halls.
Yeah. This guard just walks into the lab and he's like, oh, this shirtless guy with pointy ears he's just friends with this guy that's dressed in a uniform like mine. Doesn't shoot them. It is my understanding via Call of Duty that Nazis will walk into a room and they will shoot first and ask questions later. This guy's just playing his part, just walks up and allows himself to get hit by the Zeon guy and taken out. And that whole scene was a mess. I did not like any of that. They got caught again, which they didn't need to be.
This goes to show you again, these are not real Nazi Germans with, you know, the hate pouring out of them that you know, was in our history. They are kind of, they're only like living on propaganda. They're just doing what they're told based on this very short period of you know, education from outside sources. So
I just kind of took it as lazy writing. Like this actor needed to walk into the room. So he just walked into the room and didn't do any more acting outside of that. That's how I viewed it. But putting a little bit of, you know, canon into it, I suppose.
He could have like reached for his gun or something like that before they incapacitated him.
He had
though,
his
right?
gun out the whole time. Like he had his gun drawn.
Oh, that's right. You're right.
But yeah, it was.
Yeah.
And then when they escape, they go through a sewer. The Zeons have an actual literal underground resistance, which I thought was cool that the sewers didn't look very sewery. They looked like those crystal caves that we see in it. I'm just gonna just write that one off, and it's the same set as every other cave that we see in the show.
Yeah. Stage 19.
But this is when Kirk explains to the resistance what's going on and who they actually are. And this is something I've noticed with myself in a lot of, not just Star Trek, but in a lot of TV and movies, is when the characters explain what's actually going on. And why is that so satisfying to me? Because I already know what's going on. Why do I have to? It's weird. It's very satisfying to me to know that all the other characters know what I know.
Yeah. And I think it's because we've probably been having to make a lot of assumptions getting up to this point. And now when they say it out loud, you're like, oh, okay, so I was right this whole time and everything's, you know, accurate. But I don't like when they explain it so blatantly, so obviously that, okay, this is just to make sure the audience is up to speed with where we're at right now. You know, I like to see it drawn out on a board and moving pieces or sticks in the dirt, you know, move the rocks around. Like, you know, we're planning a heist kind of thing. It makes it a little more fun.
So from there, they end up going to this. After there's a little bit of a test to see if Kirk and Spock were who they said they were. And there's a ploy involved with a woman that was actually part of the underground, but she's a native to the planet that they're on. Not a native Zeon. She's an Ecosian that is against the Ecosians.
Yeah.
She's some high up, highly decorated person in the military, and Kirk, Spock, and the other, I forget the other Zeon guy's name.
I don't know.
I don't know if they even said it, and it doesn't matter. They accompany her to this gala of sorts, which is basically just where a bunch of them are getting together to watch the Fuhrer, who is John Gill, make an announcement on a screen in a different room, which is it's very pomp and circumstance, but that's where they come up with a plan to talk to John Gill, to be able to talk to him and say, hey, what's going on? This isn't the guy that I know. Why are there Nazis on a planet that are so far away and so far out of time from Earth?
Yeah. And what was his original mission on that planet? Do you remember?
It was just observation. Okay. I think it was literally just an observation mission.
That got derailed real quick.
Oh, yeah. They sneak into the building. And by sneaking in, I mean, they accompany her into there as like her camera crew, which I thought was a pretty clever way of getting in there.
Yeah.
The best part, my favorite part of this episode, is when they get in there successfully and Spock is like, Captain, I understand gambling. He has this like smirk on his face. Like, he's so happy that it actually worked. He's like, you never know if it's going to happen, but it did. It's exhilarating.
That's so funny. Good. I never thought about that, but imagine like Vulcans and Ferengi. You hardly ever see them together, but of Vulcans would make them bankrupt going into their casinos using their logic and doing math in their head. They could count cards without even blinking, like just sitting at a table. They would have the odds over the house, and that would be hilarious.
Yeah. Kirk responds to Spock by saying, "Very good, Mr. Spock. We may make a human of you yet," which is a very not great thing to say to somebody. But Spock's retort is great. He's like, "I hope not." Like, he doesn't say it like in his sassy, sarcastic tone that he's known for. He just, "I hope not." Yeah. It's so good.
Well, I mean,
look
around. We're surrounded by Nazis and influence of humans.
Yeah, no shit, right?
Maybe don't make me one of these guys. Thanks. I think I'm okay with my people.
Oh, man. It was so good. I loved that part of this episode. Just that one, like, little 20-second clip. That scene, that was so good.
I think he's trying to say, to understand gambling, to enjoy gambling is a human trait, is like common for humans. But yeah, it's not like, you know, humans are better and we can't wait to make you one of us. But I think that's kind of, I don't know, that's how it came off to me, is like, yeah, we're gonna fix you. We'll make you human someday.
Yeah, that's kind of what I got from it too.
No, thanks.
So they go to the gala. They watch on the screen as Gil is giving this speech about how they're going to go to war, full on war against Zeon, and they're going to launch weapons manned and unmanned against their planet, which is a very close by planet. So they've been, even though they're not warp capable, they've been in each other's lives for a long time. These two planets have. Kirk and Spock realize that Gil is, he's either drunk or he's drugged or he's, something's not right. They're covering his mouth with the microphone and you can't see how he's talking or any of that, which I thought was, I was like, okay, maybe they're going to do something decent with the story. Like, they're manipulating him like a puppet. And I guess that was kind of what they did.
That's what I was expecting. Like, he was being, you know, hypnotized or something, where really he's just like standing there and we don't see his mouth because it's a recording they made or something like that.
Yeah.
You know?
The thing that I thought was funny though, is that when Kirk calls up to the ship to get Bones down there to the planet to inspect, to see what's wrong, he tells Uhura, "Hey, by the way, put Bones in a Nazi outfit, put him in a Colonel's Nazi outfit circa 1944 or something like that." She's like, "Okay, Captain." It's like,
yeah, like no questions.
Yeah. What? I mean, people on that ship always question the captain. Like, just Scotty does it all the time. "Did I hear you right, sir?" Like, just something to clarify. Did you say Nazi Colonel uniform? Like, it's like, okay, Captain, I'll do that.
That's right. I mean, I would at least, maybe time is of the essence or whatever, but yeah, I would at least second guess to make sure I heard that right, because that sounds, you know, we didn't expect anything to do with Nazis on this planet. And then,
right.
I mean, if we got word that, oh yeah, there's Nazis down here, we're going to try to figure this out, okay, then I'd be prepared for Nazi uniform, but that would be out of left field otherwise.
Yeah. Bones was having some issues getting the uniform on, so they beam him down while he's still getting the boots on. And of course they get caught again. And
yeah,
I did like their way out of it. It's like, oh yeah, Colonel is drunk over here, and we get to see Bones acting somewhat drunk for like 6 seconds. I want to see more of that. I want to see DeForest Kelly as Bones drunk, like acting drunk, not actually drunk, but acting drunk. That
actually drunk is fine too.
Well, yeah, I mean, they could have played with it. I don't want to see a doctor drunk though, in general. Like, it's just something off-putting about that. It's like, no, they can't drink. They're my doctor.
Yeah, you're supposed to be smart and safe. I give you my life, so I have to be able to rely on you.
No doubt. Yeah,
he's a great actor too. I love when we get to see him flex his acting every once in a while.
Yeah. I wish we would have seen more of that for sure. Get to the point where they actually are able to talk to Gil, because that's where Spock saved the day. Spock saved the day by mind melding with Gil, which at this point in the show, it's just kind of like they can use it whenever they want to, whenever they need something.
All the time. So I don't know if I'm sure I've mentioned this on the show before. In Voyager, Tuvok makes it clear how intimate a mind meld is, and we use it all the time in this show, and I'm sure other places. But it's not just a one way, like I'm looking into your brain. It's we're merging our brains temporarily. Like, I'm making myself vulnerable to you too. And so whenever they talk about mind melds, that's what I'm thinking. It's like, okay, now not only will this guy's memories live in Spock, but vice versa. Now he knows, you know, Spock's memories of making love to his wife and stuff like that are all in this guy's brain. Like it's complicated, but
it's one of those things that they
I like how they develop it later and make it more important. I mean, here it's a handy tool, but I like for it to have that gravity behind it.
Yeah. It's one of those things, like with the transporters being different before TOS. It's kind of one of those things.
Yeah. But
I just don't like how they use it as a tool that often. Like,
yeah,
we only have like 5 minutes left of the episode at this point, so let's just mind meld our way through it.
Yeah, it's like we need a couple more tricks in the bag. Yeah. I mean, sometimes we just have Kirk just punches a guy, just knocks him out in the first punch. Like, we could do that a little more, or a couple other tricks. I mean, even Kirk does the Vulcan nerve pinch sometimes too, right?
I not as effectively, but yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
Gil explains to Kirk after the mind meld that he stumbles through it because he's still very drugged at this point. Mm-hmm. Saying that he was trying to show them a more efficient way to get to a better way of living, and that if he was the one in charge, there would be no evil leading that efficiency, which would lead to a better Nazi party than we had here on Earth. And obviously that didn't happen. I don't think it could ever happen.
It's like, I'll do a really bad thing, but in a good way with a good reason.
Right.
And I'll be a nice guy about it, so nobody's going to get hurt. It's like, no, there's an influx of power. There's going to be people rising up to take the power, to gain control for their own personal gain, and not care about who they have to step on to do it.
This guy's a professor. Like, Kirk called him. I didn't know he was a professor until like the scene and Kirk's slapping him saying, "Wake up, professor, wake up." He's a professor. He was sent there supposedly, I'm guessing by himself by Starfleet to observe what's going on this planet. And he ends up being Hitler.
Yeah.
Like, how do you get from here to there so rapidly?
And
somebody who's supposed to be smart.
He's like, I'm trying to help them improve to be more efficient and blah, blah, blah. You shouldn't be doing any of that.
Right.
You're supposed to just be watching, observe and report. Like, I get if they're at a pinnacle where their whole society is going to collapse and they're all going to die before you could even send your report out. Okay, maybe try to slow that down. But you just completely derailed all of their development and turned them into a war society.
Yeah. The leader of the party, I think, is who this other person was. Not the main bad guy. The leader of the party that walked in on them the third time ended up being a good guy. He was part of the resistance and letting them go, I think, at this point. To go capture, I want to say like Malkavoy or something, whatever whoever Gil's second in command was, who was leading the party to war and all this the whole time. He was the main villain of the whole episode, the second in command guy.
The corruption within his ranks, pretty much.
Yeah. Basically, cat's out of the bag. Everybody knows what's going on. And the second in command ends up shooting through the wall where Kirk and Gil are. Gil ends up dead, naturally. They capture... Did the second-in-command guy end up getting killed, too? Or did he just... I think he got shot.
Okay.
I don't remember. He either got shot or got captured. It doesn't matter anymore at this point, because it's Star Trek. Everything's washed away. Nothing matters. And then even Spock says, as they're leaving, oh, both these planets would make a fine addition to the Federation. No, they absolutely wouldn't. You can see how easily manipulated these guys are.
Yeah, they need some more self-growth and whatnot before we can bring them in. I mean, they're like you're saying, so easily manipulated, ready for war, just killing each other. No, like, let them grow and learn before we try to do that. Or if you really want to, since we've already messed them up, you have to spend years, like, re-educating their people and teaching them, you know, how to be peaceful with their neighbor planets and stuff before you give them the ability to travel to your planet and start wars, you know?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Or travel to planets that aren't part of the Federation and start wars in their name.
Yeah. Each citizen can go be a dictator in their own planets, right?
Right. Exactly. This is one of those times that they actually say the moral of the story, like in words at the very end, when McCoy says absolute power corrupts absolutely. That seems to be a recurring theme in this as the our moral of the story. That's, I mean, that's what I got. That absolute power corrupts absolutely, and learning from your history is important so as to not repeat it. Those are the two morals of the story that I got out of here.
And don't get involved when you don't need to be involved, right? You can't untouch the butterfly, so.
Yeah, like, that's good.
Just step back and observe.
Yeah. There was no need for Gil to be like, okay, I'm here to observe. These guys really need a Hitler involved in their lives.
These guys really need a Hitler.
It just went from 0 to 11 so fast, it seems. Yeah. Like, we haven't heard from this guy in a while. I wonder if he's okay. He's Hitler. Like, holy shit.
I mean, I kind of wish we saw a little bit more of his motivation like that, like how it progressed. Maybe a little flashback of him on the planet, just like a, I don't know, 10-second scene or something like that, but that showed why he thought that was necessary to go so extreme. Maybe they were already going into maybe being a warlike society, and so he's like, okay, I better grab this bull by the horns and steer it in a direction that will unite the people, and you know, if I'm on top, then I can keep it from getting too bloody.
I mean, that was basically like exactly what happened. They did say that they are a warlike species. That they are. So that was pretty much exactly it. But still, you'd think that leading this warlike species to a hateful platform like the Nazi Party would not be the professor's first go-to reaction.
Lead them all to turn into hippies and be peaceful and want to, you know, hug trees and save the planet. Like, that's great. Yeah. Don't lead them to follow the most, you know, hateful people of our history.
Exactly. Yeah. What would you grade this episode?
I think I'm gonna give it a B. It was a good episode. I liked, I mean, obviously the subject matter is delicate, but I think they did a good job. And I like these kind of, it's not really a time travel episode, but it's a wannabe time travel. So they're fun to see something like that.
Yeah. I'll give it a B minus. Throughout watching this, I did have very mixed feelings. The story that they were telling, I think, does need to be retold over and over and over again, because it's a story that we need to see lest you forget. You know, you have to learn from your history. My problems were more of the production side of it. Like the sets were pretty lacking. They reused a lot of sets from like the cave set. I'm guessing that most of the props were from another CBS or NBC, whoever had them at the time. I'm guessing it was from another one of their shows, which is fine when you're on a budget. You gotta do things like that. But man, other than Spock, most of the characters seemed dumb in this episode. Like, they were making very quick, rash decisions that they normally wouldn't or shouldn't be making. Mm-hmm. And I think Spock was awesome.
Yeah, I wonder, like you're saying, I wonder if this episode was just a real low budget for a reason, like maybe because they're getting towards the end of the season and they're running out of funding.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they had to cut some corners on a couple episodes, but like, hey, we have another show in Paramount, you know, in another wing of the building, whatever. We can reuse all their military uniforms for this and all their props and stuff, and we have most of what we need for it.
You know, they were notoriously being let go. Like, the show wasn't going to continue after this season. It was a fan letter writing campaign that got it going again. Yeah. So they were probably dealing with that, like you said, very, very slash budgets. So
yeah,
it does suck to see it, though. So I'm going to comment on it. But I guess I shouldn't really hold it against it, which is why I gave it a B minus and not like a C or something.
Yeah. But this bumpy road is really, I mean, what got them. They got a third season, and then this struggle and everything, us being able to still watch it, is what created all the different Star Treks that we have. So though it was a rough road for them to get there, at least, you know, the Gene Roddenberry's dream lived on in other series for sure.
I was about to start singing the Enterprise intro right there, but I'll digress. Anyway, that was our episode this week. Next week, we are talking about TOS season 2, episode 22, By Any Other Name.
Yes. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Twitch. Talk to us on Discord. Check out the geekfreakspodcast.com. We got all kinds of information, links to all of our 11 different Geek Freaks podcast series right now. So check out all the other ones. Don't forget to join us next time.
Yeah. Until then, Transporter Room, 2 to beam up.